This week's show with Kate Festo is sponsored by Avlia Mediterranean Folk Embroidery at avliaembroidery.com. The newest design from Krista West is the Cypress Grove Table Runner. It features a restful grove of cypress trees worked in warm red, old gold, and vibrant green, and was inspired by a scarf from a bride's trousseau from the Greek islands. Also, do your shopping early. Avlia's month-long thank you sale begins November 1. The sale is 20% off everything site-wide. Go to avliaembroidery.com, save some money, and get a bunch of beautiful projects to stitch in the coming months. Thanks to Krista West and Avlia Mediterranean Folk Embroidery for sponsoring this show. And now on to our conversation with Kate Festo. All right, welcome back. I'm Gary Parr, and you're listening to Fiber Talk, that twice weekly podcast for needlework artists. Our artist this week, Kate Festo. Kate, welcome.
Hi, thank you, Gary. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yes, thanks for doing this. Now, this is a first for Fiber Talk, as best I can recall. There have been so many, I'm starting to forget who I interviewed. But I believe this is the first time that I've interviewed mother and daughter. I believe this is.
Oh, so, delightful.
Yeah. So Kate's mother is Margaret Kinsey, who I interviewed, 4 or 5 weeks ago. I forget when. So, yes. So I did not know that. Kate let me know, that she is daughter of Margaret. And I do recall, she mentioned her daughter, Kate, in the interview, but, you know, meant nothing at the time. Cause, you know, whatever. So approached you separately, completely separately, without knowing. So it was not planned, but it works out. It's great.
Well, thank you for having me, and our trick worked.
Yes. Well done. Well done. So when I learned that Margaret is your mother, the first question that came to my mind was, because if you grow up as a kid with a parent who is, you know, stunningly brilliant at something, it's not unusual for the child to just rebel and go in a different direction. You know, I want nothing to do with it.
Right.
And clearly you didn't. Based on your work, you didn't at all. You dug in. Was that early on, or did that happen later that you picked up needlework?
We started early. As my mother said, that idle hands are the devil's plaything or whatever it is.
Yeah, whatever it is.
Yeah, so summer vacations were spent doing some sort of needlework project. And the first one I remember was I was a Girl Scout, and she and her friend Valerie Eriks came to our Girl Scout troop and taught us the sewing badge in Girl Scouts.
Ah, okay, sure.
So that was the beginning. There's certain things that you had to do in order to get the badge, and they guided us through that. I started stitching by doing crewel embroidery. She got some wool, she had linen, and we would draw little designs, houses, birds, trace them out of probably an Erica Wilson book or Sylvia Sidney.
Why not? Yeah, sure.
and we did the basic stitches, outline, stem, French knots, satin stitch, that sort of thing, in rudimentary style. So having done that with us, my sister and I, we learned how to do the basic stitches.
Mm-hmm.
A running stitch, a split stitch, outline, a chain stitch, French knot, buttonholes even. And as my mother's interests grew, because she joined EGA in the 70s, early 70s, and our projects diversified. So we didn't do the same thing two times in a row. You know, if you liked one particular technique, you always had something. But it was sporadic for me as a child because, yes, there were summer vacations, but I had an older brother who needed a playmate, so I'd go out and he taught me how to do layups and basketball layups and shoot the hoop, you know, and so a spiral. I played quarterback with him because we played. He taught me how to throw a spiral. If it was a rainy day, yeah, okay, I'd consider reading a book or stitching something. But if it's a sunny day, we were outside in the backyard. Mom used to make sure we get outside in the backyard. Wouldn't let us just sit and watch TV.
Uh-huh.
I think I remember you were allowed an hour a day, so choose your shows wisely, you know.
Yeah, okay.
So it was sporadic as I was growing up.
But always there, though, right? I mean, the environment was always there. The opportunity.
Yeah, if you wanted to talk to my mother, you had to go to her sewing room.
Oh, okay.
Or the kitchen, because that's where she hung out. And the kitchen was next to the sewing room. So there's this one area of the house that if she was in one room or the other all the time.
Well, as a kid, you always know where mom's at. So there's something there. Yeah.
Yeah. She eventually went to work when I hit like junior high or high school. And so her sewing time became more precious to her. So in the evenings, but still, you knew where mom was after she got home.
And this is not to paint a picture that she was ignoring raising her kids, but...
No, not at all. She yeah. was a good disciplinarian, trust me.
I had a sense.
She is still very disciplined in everything she does. And I wish I had inherited some of that.
Wait, you can throw a spiral. You know, come on.
Yes. Yeah, no, I have outside interests, I guess. Anyway, in growing up, there was needlepoint, there was knitting, there was crochet, there was crewel embroidery. I didn't know what cross stitch was. Never touched that. Bargello. Some of the more rudimentary ones, not cross stitch, but some of the more rudimentary ones. And it wasn't, quilting. And it wasn't until I got married, and then like a couple of years later, my husband's brother was getting married, and I said, gee, Mom, I'd like to make them like a quilt or something for their wedding present, whatnot. And she came up with, and I don't know who the designer was, it was out of a book that said, quilt in a weekend.
Okay.
No, seriously. This was an 8-point star. And the corner blocks that were just square were like 14 inches by 14 inches.
Uh-huh.
So your diamond shapes to make the stars were a 14-inch square cut in half, and you flip them around and that sort of thing. But they said it was in a weekend because they sewed it all together. You can do the quilt top in a weekend if you use a sewing machine.
Mm, okay.
From cutting and pinning to sewing the piece top together. You could do it in a weekend because they were very large pieces. Well, I am notorious for doing things the hard way, so I hand-stitched it together.
Oh, boy.
It took a couple of months. I did get it done for the wedding day, but I had also made a matching pillow with a little lace ruffle on it and put their names on the corner of the quilt and the date they got married and that sort of thing. So that started something. And then my mother was making a quilt strip cutting quilt.
Oh, that log thing or?
Not a log cabin, but the one that it was strips that were sewn together and you cut them like a Seminole pattern where they're cut at different lengths and that sort of thing.
Oh, okay.
And then you don't match them up with the colors. You sort of stagger the colors. Anyway, and she's like, I'm running out of time. Would you come by after work and help me? Because we both lived up here in New Canaan. Would you come by and help me sew it together? So I'm like, yeah. So I actually stopped at her house at like 6 in the morning and would start until I quilt the actual quilting part along in the ditch or whatever until I had to go to work and then come back at night and help her until your eyes are like bugging out of your head. And that kind of got things started. And then she got, this must have been one of her first teaching offers up at the Connecticut River Valley EGA. They had a regional seminar that was being held outside of Hartford. And she's like, oh, Catherine, if you join the EGA, you can come up and it'll be less expensive than if you're not a member. So I said, okay. So so she came to my house and we went up there. But I joined it. She told me to get in touch with my friend Valerie, who I mentioned before with the Girl Scout thing. And she'll get you in contact with the lady who, there's a night group for the chapter up here in Connecticut. And I said, okay. So I contacted Valerie, who put me in touch with Janet Jarvis, who's a lovely woman. And Janet's like, come on, we meet here. And, you know, so I went to the first meeting and whatnot, and they had someone teaching Hardanger.
Mm.
I mean, I know I've heard of it, but I didn't, only in passing, somebody said the word Hardanger. I literally had no idea what they were doing. So it was this simple little Hardanger thing that was a square with squares in it. And I was like, oh, this is cool, you know. And the EGA just sort of opened more doors. So that's when I was a mother of two by that time.
Hmm.
And had a day job and that sort of thing. But
and didn't really need one more thing to do, but that's okay.
I have a room full of things to do now. So, yes, I learned from my mother to learn from her grandmother.
So, well, all right, so that's interesting then. So the environment is there, but it wasn't pushed on you. And then the...
Right. There, I had to do certain things on summer vacations as a kid because it was a rainy day and you're not going to sit in front of the boob tube, you know,
right.
TV.
Oh, I haven't heard that phrase in ages.
Oh. Well, never mind. We'll cut that part out.
Yeah.
Yeah, won't sit in front of the TV on a vacation.
Yep. That's okay. We'll leave it. We'll leave boob tube in. I don't care. That's a classic. It's a classic. I grew up with it. It's okay. Yeah. Well, that's okay. See, because that's kind of cool because, you know, that's what I think a lot of times drives kids away is
being forced to.
Yeah. And
yeah.
And then, you know, as a parent, if you just make it available and if there's interest, you help.
Right.
And you don't push. And if it hooks, you know, if it connects, then fine. If it doesn't, you know, you just let it fall.
Yeah. So I was 5 years out of college when I asked her to help me make that first quilt.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd been doing little things prior to that, but nothing as big as a quilt. So it was sort of, you know, it was daunting at the time. And then she said she found this pattern. Oh, quilt in a weekend. Okay, that sounds good. And I did it the hard way.
Okay. All right. Now I got to ask the question. After years have passed, is that quilt still around? And if you look at it, do you go, oh, I could have done it so much better?
Okay. That quilt is with my brother-in-law, and it's at their house. And I made 1, 2, 3 more of those. And the third one I made as a bedspread for my husband and I, and we wore it out.
Ah.
So it's up in the top of my closet with me wondering whether I'll try to fix it or not. I started a modified Irish chain quilt. An Irish chain usually has 3 rows going, so they're crisscrossed diagonally like a lattice.
Okay.
Well, this one has 5 rows one way and like 3 rows the other way. So I modified it. And that one is still in a bag with its thread, waiting to have like the last corner finished.
Oh.
And that is like 25 years.
Oh no.
Yeah. So I've just been, everything now is embroidery and not quilting. So my husband's like, when are you going to finish my quilt? I'm like, first of all, it's my quilt. It's not your quilt. And second of all, I finish it when I'm darn ready.
Mm-hmm.
So I keep hoping that one cold January night, I'll just pull it out, cuddle underneath it and finish it.
Yeah. And discover that 3 hours later it's done, and then you go, why didn't I do this like years
yes,
ago? Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, what's wrong with me? You pick this thing up and start the Hardanger, the EGA, and then is it, do you have your own path, or do you kind of get in line with your mother and start learning the silk and metal thread and Japanese embroidery, or do you try your own path?
I didn't attend a seminar until 2007 or 2008. So before that, I joined in 2002. So before that, I was doing group correspondence courses with the EGA. And then I joined ANG also. So between the ANG and the EGA, there were umpteen projects that come along. We had good program chairs in our chapters, because I'm talking two different organizations. Right. It's like everything that came along, I tried. And it was like, wow, I like doing this. And it was funny because the first seminar class, you'll love this, the first seminar class I ever went to was in Rye, New York. It was the metropolitan region. And my mom's like, oh, you should try to get into this Jane Nicholas class.
Okay.
She's a marvelous teacher. She's lovely. I'm like, okay, that sounds fine.
Here we go. Here we go.
No idea. Okay. So I signed up for a class with mom. And somebody, I was on a waiting list for Jane Nicholas. And someone dropped out and I got the call. So I'm sitting in the Jane Nicholas class with my friend Janet. We're sitting next to each other going, okay, you ready? Yeah. And I remember going, now we're going to do a stem stitch along this. And I'm like, Janet, which one's the stem stitch? And because I knew how to do it, I didn't know what the name of it was.
Oh, okay.
Because I had done so many things that just going back and doing a regular stem stitch was something that I was like, which one is that, the one over, under, you know? And Jane's classes were for definitely advanced students.
Yes, yes.
And I was somewhere between novice and beginner at that point with taking, well, I hadn't taken a class, and, you know, following instructions and listening to the teacher. And I was using these silk floss that I hadn't been using before. Most of the stuff was either DMC Pearl 5 or 3 or 8, and DMC floss, stranded floss.
Yeah.
So the silk stuff was just flying everywhere. And
Wait, back up. So your mom talks you into a Jane Nicholas class.
Yeah.
That involves silk.
Yeah.
So you've never done any stump work of any kind or any of that kind of, and never used silk.
Not really, no. I mean, maybe I did, but
that's unfair. That's really unfair.
It was one little thing. But you know what? It was a great learning experience. And I finished that piece, and it was a crocus with a jewel bug. And the way she did it, and we were using passing thread and couching it like you would for in circular shapes and that sort of thing.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I was like, okay, this is a marathon. It was a sprint. It was like a series of sprints. Every half hour, we're on to a different technique.
Oh.
And it was great, you know, because you got refreshed from learning all this stuff and everything. Well, I took it and I said, well, I'm going to take it to the room tonight and I'm going to, you know, play a little catch up so I can get in the morning. Because she said, have such and such done. And I was like, okay. Well, I was up till 2 a.m. because the thread had tangled so badly that I had to untangle it before I could use it.
Yeah.
Because I tried to pull it out like you do with a DMC. You can just pull it out and...
Right.
Well, that doesn't work with the silk. I don't remember what kind of silk it was, but I was like, oh, my God. And I had to untangle it so I could use it. I didn't even go out to dinner with them that night. You know, I was just, I'm going to sit here and I'm going to do this. So it was 2 a.m. untangling silk. And I've learned many things since then. And that doesn't happen to me anymore. So I was beginner's mistakes kind of thing. But it was a marvelous piece. I did it very well. I sent her a photograph. She said it looked very good. I was happy about that, you know. And it hangs on my wall in my living room.
Oh, well. Then it holds up, so that's good.
Yep. Yeah. I got a domed frame, an oval frame with a domed glass.
Oh.
Well, it's plexiglass or something. So it looks like a bug container, you know, or a bug,
yeah,
like in a collection or something.
So then at this juncture, then you pretty much tried everything then. I mean,
as of today,
I mean, yeah. even at that point, it sounds like you had tried several techniques. So you really tested the world then.
Yeah, I didn't have a favorite. I almost didn't care what it was. I just wanted to sure, I'll try it. know, just dive in, no problem.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Well, that's, you know, that's good. I mean, it's some people do that and some people never move on off of one technique. And I had it
in my face growing up. I mean, every time we turned around, she was changing the pictures on the wall because she had a new one she wanted to hang up. She has a hallway at her home now that I've been down there a couple of times, and the pictures are all different. Why? Because she has so many that she's done and classes from EGA and whatever that are framed that she can just change the decor.
Got a whole room full of stuff, all cataloged. Just pull it out and hang it up.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Wow. Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. Oh. So what gets you into what you're doing now? I mean,
you're metal thread.
Okay. I mean, was it back to your mother and show me some of that stuff, or did you find that interest on your own?
I really enjoyed going to seminars. And the more I stitched, the more, like, my friends would ask, you know, how do you do this? Or a new person to the group would say, how do you do this or whatever? And I found people were asking me. There were a lot more experienced stitchers in the group when I started with them.
Uh-huh.
And then I started learning the silk and metal thread, taking classes with Mom and, like, Tanya Berlin.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I had one friend, my friend Meg said, you know, I want to do a piece for my church, but I'd love to do gold work. Can you show me some of that? So I designed a gilded bloom, which is a little leaf with a tiny bud, and it's all gold work, and there's gold kid in the middle of the leaf and that sort of thing. And I designed that to be able to show her how to do some of these basic techniques. That little piece ended up being used in my teacher certification exam.
Oh.
It was one of the first pieces I was asked to teach to a group who was having their golden anniversary.
Ooh, no pressure.
No, but I mean, like, it's all gold work. So they want to do their golden anniversary. It was a chapter down in South New Jersey. And I've offered it to other places. They got picked up. And I was like, you know, this is cool. It's just very cool to be asked to instruct people. And I found when I was in front of a class that it was like a marvelous feeling being able to help people and show them, you know, this is a way to do it. And, you can do that if you want to. And if they wanted to change it, I just let them.
Yeah.
You know, unless there's something that just isn't going to work at all. But, you know, most of the time they want to do some little thing a little different. And I don't have any problem with them changing the design. It's, you know, then it's an adaptation. That's fine.
Right. I'm a former teacher long ago. And, I'm with you. I've always said when the bell rings and the doors close and it's just you and the students, there's nothing beats that. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's, I won't say it's a rush, but it's a exhilarating feeling to be able to help people.
Yes.
So I found myself saying, what can I do to reach out and reach more people? And I'm like, gee, I should just become a teacher. And that way I can, you know, help as many people as I can.
Yeah.
So I was talking to my mom and I had so much interest in so many techniques that she's like, you know, there's silk and metal thread probably has the least quantity of teachers right now, or 4 years ago when I, 4 or 5 years ago when I started this. Mm-hmm. She goes, why don't you do that? I was like, okay, because really it's just surface embroidery.
Yeah.
It's your basic running stitch, back stitch, split stitch, stem, outline, chain, French knot, that sort of thing. Just done with cool threads.
Yep.
So I was like, okay, so I applied and I had the basic requirements. So they said, okay, I don't have a strong art background, but when I hit a design and I hit it good, it's, you know, it rocks.
Yeah.
So,
you know, I wondered about that. Let me interrupt you here. I wondered about that because your work sure shows an artistic talent, at least to my eye. Is there some formal art training or has that just come to you?
There was a limited amount of formal art training. I've taken some classes since I've gotten older, adult study things. My dad was an artist. He painted in oils and he had an eye and he could do exactly what he wanted. What he saw in his mind is what he put down on the canvas.
Mm-hmm.
My sister is a brilliant artist and she too has quite an eye and can, what she sees is what ends up on her paper or canvas or whatever she's working on, because she works in different medias. My brother has taken drawing lessons, so he is a phenomenal pencil and paper,
pen and ink,
yeah, artist. So there's something in there, and I mean, it's in the family.
I guess. I
wasn't as good as everybody else, so I didn't pursue that as much as maybe I should have. I used to say I couldn't draw a straight line with a ruler, but, you know, obviously I can now.
You took a class, right?
Yeah, I took several classes. There's an art school locally that I've taken some classes with. But anyway, in talking to Mom, she's like, why don't you get into silk and metal thread? And I'm like, yeah, okay, that's fine. So I got some tools for it, and she gave me some tips and advice and that sort of thing, and here I am.
What a wonderful creative family to grow up in. even today, the Thanksgiving dinner must be a lot of fun with all that creativity.
Oh, we didn't have any family up here when I was growing up in Connecticut. We had friends. My dad was very gregarious, and so we'd have friends for the holidays.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one Thanksgiving, or I don't remember if it was Thanksgiving or Christmas. We served dinner on a ping pong table. There were that many people. And it was just, my mom's a marvelous chef, and she loves sewing and she loves the kitchen. And so they pulled it off. It was great, you know. We were the cleanup crew.
Sounds like we need to do a show, What Can Your Mother Not Do? I think that might be interesting.
I don't know.
A short show then. Okay.
Yeah, it would be a very short show. She's wonderful. She's been my sensei.
Yeah.
As they say. And she has started me on Japanese embroidery.
Where are you at on that spectrum?
Well, I'm only in phase two because she started me before I went into the certification program. And I finished a certification program in 2018, and I had a couple of gigs in 2019, and then COVID hit, which threw me for a loop because I hadn't really gotten my feet wet. And now I've got to learn a whole new strategy of doing teaching online and that sort of thing. So I got a document camera, and I'm building a website.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a little slow and getting up to scale like all the other teachers who've been doing this for months and months and years.
Yeah.
But I'm working at it.
Those document cameras, I got to get me one of those. Man, those little things are amazing.
They are. They really are. And it's like you can get it so close and you hit the focus button and boom, you're looking at like Rosashi canvases, 40 threads on the warp and 17 on the weft, and the 17 on the weft are like actually three threads that are woven together.
Uh-huh.
So this thing will show that, like, wow, perfectly. Yeah.
Wow, what a great teaching tool. Yeah.
Yes, it is.
So what certifications do you have? I mean, obviously the teaching certification.
Yes, that's what I have, is the EGA certified teacher in silk and metal thread.
Okay. That one you can do, and you're working on Japanese embroidery. How are you finding that? I so admire people who do that at whatever level.
The last time I worked at it, I'm only on phase two, but the last time I worked on it, I was getting it pretty good.
Yeah.
So at some point I'll get back to it. I just don't know when.
The precision and perfection quest in that really appeals to me.
Yes.
So, yeah.
It's helped with my own embroidery.
Yeah.
On other techniques, yes.
Yeah. So through all of this, have you had other mentors other than your mother? I mean, have there been other people that have helped you shape this?
Every person I've come into contact with the EGA.
Yeah.
I know a lot of teachers because at seminars I roomed with my mother. So I was kind of hanging out with the teacher group.
Mm-hmm.
Feeling like odd man out at the time, but I hung out with them. They were all very nice to me, and they all had advice and tidbits and suggestions. And I mean, every one of them has been like marvelous to me. And the members of EGA, and in particular my own chapter, I've learned so much from them that I have to thank them.
Mm-hmm.
I thank my mother. I thank the other teachers. I thank my EGA chapter, my A&G chapter colleagues, because they do nothing but give.
Yeah.
So you absorb this as you're listening, you know, and like, oh, wow, that's a really good tip. And there's so many things you need to remember when you're doing stuff.
Yeah. That's, yeah. Listen. You know, I had a wise old guy, old veteran I'm a magazine editor. So, one of my first magazines was called Research and Development. And, what became my beat was vacuum technology and semiconductors about the time the first PC showed up. So it was the very early stages. And, one of the veterans on the staff, I said, how am I going to learn this stuff? He says, well, you find people who know what they're doing.
Yep.
And then you shut up. And,
yes.
And you might be surprised. and I followed that all along, because he was dead right. Just shut up, absorb it, make notes, ask questions, and you'll learn things. Yeah.
Yeah. So I've done a lot of that. I take something away from every class I've ever taken. Just we meet. I have a stitching group that meets weekly on Wednesday nights, and I've learned more from them. That Wednesday night group is just they're not affiliated, and well, actually now they're mostly affiliated. I started a new EGA chapter and got most of them to sign up for it.
Yeah.
So they're part of the EGA now. I used to not be. But anyhow. So you learn everywhere. Keep your eyes open. Keep your mouth shut.
Yeah.
You know, you'll be surprised what you pick up.
Yeah. You'd be really surprised what you learn. So you're a classic example of someone who has a full benefit from EGA, A&G, from the organizations, but also full benefit from the people involved, and really, because some people, I don't get anything out of it, or I just show up. But you're clearly an example of someone who has gotten maximum benefit.
You get out of a group what you put into it,
mm-hmm.
And if you I was sitting one night before I even started the certification, going, oh my God, this is a passion. I am not happier than when I'm sitting there doing something with a needle and thread. You know, it's, well, maybe a good piece of chocolate or something, but it's.
Yeah. Well, that.
Yeah. I mean, it's to the point where I always take stitching with me. I have an embroidery book that I've been reading at lunchtime at work. you know, because you can't. The rule in my house is you can't stitch and eat.
Well, yeah,
So
that's
it's sort of
the.
it's a diet aid also. My husband wanted to lose a few pounds, and he found himself at the refrigerator at night. He goes, "You know, I need something to keep my hands busy. Can you show me how to do that stuff you do?" And I'm like, "Well, all right." So we got a painted canvas, a little one, and we put it up on some stretcher bars I had. And I'm like, "This is how you make the stitch." And you go from the, you know, you go diagonally from, you know, right to left or whatever.
Yeah.
And he kept wanting to go straight up and down. He wanted to go left to the right and right to left. And I'm like, "Honey, you're supposed to all go the same direction." Well, he figured that out, and he is so prolific.
Oh.
It's amazing. And he does big projects. He's done four different Christmas stockings.
Oh.
He has done, we got these two bear canvases that had to be 20 by 20. There was two of them. He did those lickety-split, and we mounted them on pillows. So we got a polar bear and we got a brown bear on our bed. One's mine, one's his. But it has helped him. It has helped him. He's lost like 30, 40 pounds, something like that.
Oh, really? So
Yeah.
literally it kept his hands out of the refrigerator and
Yeah.
oh.
I taught my husband how to do needlepoint. I got my daughter to join the EGA when we started the new chapter. And she doesn't stitch much, but she enjoyed go she's enjoyed going to when we were meeting in person, she enjoyed going to the meeting. She got her best friend to join. And that young lady is quite an artist. She studied graphic arts, and she is good. She is very good. Anyhow, so silk and metal became the thing, and I started collecting bits and bobs of things. And, you know, "Mom, where can I get some of this?" "Oh, I got some. I'll send it to you." I'm like, "Okay." So every once in a while, she would send me some stuff. Every once in a while, like, there was one store in New Jersey, the Edwardian Needle had some gold threads. So.
Yeah, talking to your mother, you don't really need a local needlework store. You just go to your mother's house.
Well, if she lived closer, it'd be easier.
Oh, okay.
Anyhow, she, yeah. So she has sent me some things when I couldn't find them anywhere. There, that one store in New Jersey was the only one that had any metal threads. And then there's a store in, it's not Wethersfield, in Connecticut, upstate a bit, and they have a little bit. So I got some things from them, but.
So what is it about metal thread and silk? Because now, I mean, you've done it, you got your certification, you can teach it, but there must be something that has you hooked to it that you're staying with it because you've tried all these other techniques, you've done them, you're able to do them, your husband's doing needlepoint.
Needle, yeah.
You know, what is it about that keeps you connected to it and doing it?
It is like one of the most different types of techniques, because you have the soft fiber of the silk threads, and that's contrasted with the hard metals, and they work around each other, and they blend with each other, and they twist around, and there's so many different types of metal thread. And the silk thread just enhances it all, depending on which color you use, you know. And red with the gold is just brilliant. I mean, it's beautiful. I like working with the metal threads, because you can do so much with them that you can't do with, I mean, I guess you could do French knots instead of chipping. Because I got friends who like, "Okay, French knots, give me some beads. We'll put beads there instead. It'll be fine."
The cop out.
Yeah. Well, you know, they actually do like beads a lot, so it's fine. But not a cop out, but it's you can but the when you chip and then you put them the cloth like they were beads, and they're going in all different directions. You catch that light from every angle, and that it almost makes that little area look bigger or something, because you have so much light flashing off of it. And then that gold then takes on the color of the silk threads that you've used near it. So instead of gold and red, you have a gold that is red because it's reflecting. So that whole thing, and then the gold will even mute the red a little bit. So you look like you've got, instead of two colors, gold and red, you have a red gold and a gold red.
Yeah.
So you have four colors that you're seeing because your eye blends them. So in that sense, you've created with two materials four colors. And you can do that all over your design. You know, when you want the plain silk to show, boom, there you have it. And when you want something that's like a little muddled or a little subtle, you blend them together and there you go. But you don't get that kind of light unless you're using a metal thread. You don't get that kind of reflection.
Yeah.
And it's just intriguing to see what you can make happen with it's the same materials over and over, but they're used differently every time and they give a different reaction every time.
And I take that back. Using beads instead of French knots is not a cop-out. It's just another option. It's,
it
works.
It's a beading is a whole technique, so that
works.
Person has a good start in doing that.
I'm sorry.
Thank you. Thank you, my friend.
But so it's that contrast of metal, the hard metal and the silk, and what the light does, that's, I can tell, all right, that's what hooks you in. That's what gives you a playing field then.
Right.
Because for most people, when you start saying metal thread and silk and couching and all, you know, to them, and Japanese embroidery, that's the pinnacle. That's the hardest stuff to do. And so people tend to just run and hide from that. But not. But we shouldn't look at it that way.
I'm going to go see my mother at the end of October. I should send my Japanese down and have her show me how to do some of that stuff again. I'll be there all week. Why not?
Yeah, sure. knock off a level or two. You can do it.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. Well, that's, I mean, it's, I've always believed that any technique is approachable with some effort.
Yes.
And then, you know, 'cause you're only going to get good at any technique with a lot of practice. I mean, that's just a given. But I've never felt that any one technique took several years of preliminary work before you can even tackle it. You can do them. You can do any of the techniques, because it's just needle and thread. And some might take a little more effort, and in some instances a little guidance never hurts.
Right.
But you know, even what you do is to me is approachable. It's doable, and just might take a little effort.
Yeah, you just it's wonderful when you can start something with somebody who knows what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And they give you a little instruction, and then they give you a little room, and you do what they're telling you to do, and then after a while you can take that and like tweak it a little bit and maybe change something up, and then you're off. You're just doing it, you know?
Yeah. Give me a picture at the household here. Do you and your husband have a room where the needlework happens? Do you stitch separately? How does that fly?
It's a little both. He has his chair downstairs in the living room, a big cushioned chair, and he'll sit there at night, and he's got a good lamp behind him, and he'll sit there and stitch and listen to TV. We tend to listen to TV, not watch it.
Right.
And he, I'll go down there, and there's another chair that's, you know, on the other side of the little table, and I'll sit and stitch from time to time. But I have a room upstairs that is, I call the studio, which is my sanctuary.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I keep everything. And my little room is full. Of course it is. So I'm still starting every project that comes down the pike. I don't always finish them, but I have them. So if I want to finish them, I can.
See, I knew I admired you for some reason. Starting and finishing is not critical. Thank you.
I want to learn something from that class.
Mm-hmm.
And if I have sufficiently learned what I need to learn from that project, I may put it down and say, I'll finish it later. And something else always comes up, and I'm like, I need to learn that,
uh-huh.
or one aspect of that. So, yes, I have unfinished projects, but I've learned something from all of them, and that is, I call myself a perpetual student, because I'm always taking something, because I really want to know how to do that, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Or understand a type of thread better, or something like that.
Well, but isn't that the beauty of needlework?
As far as I'm concerned, yes.
Yeah. I mean, there... Every time you think you've tried it all, there's two other things you can try.
Yes, I belong to my mother's chapter in Florida, and they have a Zoom account. So I've been Zooming while they've been meeting in person. And they just did a brief program on Hedebo.
Oh, I've heard of that.
Yeah, and you had to get a particular – well, you didn't have to get the stick, but Mother, of course, found a place that sells them, and she got me a Hedebo stick. So I have that in my stash now. But you can do it with a rolled-up piece of paper, and many of them did during that class. And you make loops, and you sort of tie off – wrap the loop, and then you join those together, and then you do lacy stitches in between and that sort of thing. So – yeah, I was like, cool, that'll be fun, you know, and of course, Mom got me the stick, so that made it even better. It was like that when she started teaching the Rizashi, which is a totally different technique.
Right, right. I want to hang out with your mother. She must just be an endless bundle of energy, I'll tell you.
Yes. You know the Ever-Ready Bunny?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So she started teaching Rizashi as many silk and metal classes as she got picked up. She got picked up for as many Rizashi classes. So at the seminars, I took many. I piloted for her. I edited instruction books for her. And Rizashi is therapeutic because it's all patterns.
Mm-hmm.
And once you get the pattern, you just go and go and go and go and go, and you realize that, you know, an hour's passed and it's really developing in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
But that there were two pieces that I had at the Chicago seminar. Do you remember them?
No, I don't. No, no.
Okay. You called them needlepoint.
Oh, did I?
Because, yeah.
Because what do I know? Them, yeah.
One of them was a luggage tag that was yellow and purple.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Called Amethyst Light. That's Rizashi.
I'll be darned.
And you know it's Rizashi because every single stitch is vertical. It's straight up and down. And okay, if you notice, there are openings between the rows. You know how in needlepoint they like to, like, cover all the canvas and you don't see any holes in between
mm-hmm.
stitches or anything like that? In Rizashi, those holes are design elements. That's part of the design. That's part of the technique. It's called opposite vertical pull. And the row that is used in Rizashi was originally used in making summer weight, like robes, like Japanese robes. So you wanted air passing through.
Mm-hmm.
So part of the technique is to pull and create an opening between the bottom of one stitch and the top of the one that's below it.
So we have vented needlework then.
Yes. Exactly. And what they would do is when you're ending on the back, you run it. You have to run your needle through stitches that are in the same row as where your thread came up.
Mm-hmm.
Because what they don't want to see is if you end your thread on a diagonal, you're going to see that thread behind those openings, and they don't want that.
Yeah.
It's a very structured technique, and it's all that it's like I said before, it's a uneven weave. It is 40 threads to the warp, and 17 to the weft. And the weft threads are three threads that are woven tightly together, and you never pierce them. You go over them or under them, but never through them. And there, the different patterns that you use, the different stitches that you use, are techniques that some of them, like the irregular stitch, you never have two holes that are next to each other, unless it's on a design line. It's like the border of a design or something like that. That's, but in within the design, the irregular stitch ends at different spots and begins at different spots.
So we have creativity within some pretty rigid rules then.
Yes.
I'll be darned.
Yes, and when you make a circle, it's like a needlepoint. You're going to have a flat edge on somewhere.
Right.
Yeah. So you have to get over that. It's just going to be that way.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, now I got to go back and look at those videos because, see, I did not know Rosashi even existed till I talked to your mother. I had no idea. So now I got to go back and look at that video and see those because I remember the luggage tag.
Yes, and the other one was a small wrist purse.
Oh,
and it
yes.
had a wave going through the middle of it.
Yes.
And then five other patterns, four other patterns.
So that was Rosashi too. I'll be darned.
That was Rosashi also. All the stitches are straight up and down like a Bargello would be.
Yeah.
Right. And you'll find those opening between above and below stitches, and it's tiny because you are dealing with 40 threads to the inch going one way.
Right. So then the woven three-thread combination,
threads.
That's kind of your support for your stitch then?
It is the horizontal rows.
Okay.
And it's a single thread going up and down. The vertical rows are single thread, and the horizontal rows are those. They're called the Dan, which is spelled D-A-N, but pronounced Dan. And that's the three woven threads that are so tight. You couldn't get a needle through them anyway. Some people try, but you couldn't get a needle through it anyway. So you definitely want to aim for, and the holes are rectangular.
Oh.
Which allows you, if you think about it, you have three, and then you're going to go to the next one above. So, and you pull it. You hold your tension. Tension is very important in Rosashi. Mm-hmm. You have to maintain a steady tension to be able to maintain those holes that come in between the stitches.
Uh-huh. Well, all right, now you got me curious. I think I have to try this. Do you know where I can get a kit? Never mind.
Margaret Kinsey.
Yeah, I know where to get a kit.
Yeah.
Is the ground stiff like a needlepoint canvas, or is it soft or somewhere in between?
It's silk. It's a twisted silk thread. So it's tough in that sense. But you can crinkle it up in your hand, which you don't want to do. but and you glue the row, which is the canvas, the row is glued onto a wooden frame.
Glued on.
They have a rice paste that they use, mom uses it now, to glue it onto the back of the frame. And you thumbtack it in the back to make sure that it stays there, and you let it dry. The thumbtacks are a big thing. You take them out. So when you're stitching on it, it's glued to the frame. There's no thumbtacks. There's no tape. There's no anything else. It's the dried rice glue. And the silk row and a wooden frame. They're great projects to travel with, by the way.
Oh, I can imagine. So, all right. I got to know now. All right. So you glue this onto the wood frame.
Yeah.
But then that holds up because it sounds to me like there's a pretty good tension you're putting on this to make sure those holes stay open then.
Yep.
And that glue holds it.
Yes. It dries with the thumbtacks in.
Yeah.
So once it's dried, it's there. It's not going anywhere.
Okay.
I have a frame that I glued, that was given to me like 5 years ago, and it's still on the frame.
Oh, okay. All right. So that holds up. So you're okay. And so when you finish the piece, do you take it off the frame or is...
Yes. You take it off the frame. I actually had a friend that took the frame, painted it, and put the piece back on.
Yeah, okay. Why not? Yeah.
But you take it off and use it to make whatever. Like I made a luggage tag. I've done another one that I just taught earlier this year to the Mideastern region of the EGA that was a small coin purse that's about the same size as that luggage tag was. Mm-hmm. And they had a lot of fun doing that, and they got the little purse with the kit, and they were off and running. And 2 weeks after teaching it, some people were sending me pictures of their finished piece.
There we go.
Yeah.
So this, unlike Japanese embroidery, this is something that you don't need a formal class and supervision to get it just right. Sounds to me like this is quite doable by anyone who has some skill. No?
Yes. There's a few things that you have to know, like you ping the thread. You remember my mother's saying that you had to ping the thread because this thread is so tightly woven that it's like alive. It's like a little squirmy worm. So if you ping it, it settles down a little bit, and it's much easier to use. You need to know about the opposite vertical pull when you're doing the stitching. Those are the two main things.
Okay.
And she includes that in her instruction book. So if you did get one of her kits and you did read it, you would learn about those things.
Well, I will read because that's kind of how I learned. So, okay, yeah. I got to get a kit. I got to learn this. I got to give this a whirl. Yeah. You did it. You sucked me in.
I suckered you in?
Yep.
Perfect. Yep.
Because it's a neat effect. I mean, it's a neat visual effect, and it's unique once you realize what it is. Because your eye can just pass over it, and well, that's kind of a version of Bargello or needlepoint. But once when I studied the photos your mother sent, there's a distinct look to it.
Yes, there definitely is. It's a structured look, even though the ones I'm going to be teaching are geometric in a sense, but it's, I've got curvy lines in there, and that sort of adds life to it in motion.
Mm-hmm.
So it goes both ways. One of the other photos I sent you was the little coin purse.
Yes.
It was blue and yellow, and that one is less lively, but I couldn't believe the number of people that just loved that one and wanted to do it and wanted to pilot it and when I showed it to them and that sort of thing. But it's a marvelous technique if you like counted canvas.
Well, all right, I was going to ask that question. So then is a chart pretty much like a counted canvas chart?
Yes.
Okay.
Very much so.
Okay.
There with the Rosashi, the design lines are drawn onto the row.
Mm-hmm.
So you follow, and it's just done with the pencil. So you follow the design lines, and then like with that luggage tag, there's the circle in the middle. And then there was like two, three other lines for four other sections. So that each one of those sections is slightly different.
Yeah.
And you have the design lines delineating from one section from another.
Yeah.
So within that one section, you may have to count up to, then count down to, or count up to, you know, whatever. It's slightly counted, but it's more pattern related. It's like you'll do like a Bargello zigzag up and down going across or something like that. Then you just follow that kind of thing. But yeah, there's a little bit of counting involved, but.
It sounds like it's very meditative, too.
A lot of it is like Bargello pattern.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sorry?
I said it sounds like it's very meditative. So, yeah, like Bargello, once you get that first row in, you can just go, yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And it's all, the row itself is very expensive. So most of these projects will be small. So in terms of having something to take with you, even in a car ride, I used to do these when I was waiting for my kids to get done with sports and that sort of thing. Because all you need is a large Ziploc bag, a gallon-sized Ziploc bag. You got everything you need in it, you know, shove it in your purse and you're gone.
Okay. All right.
And it's great on airplanes. All you
Yeah,
need is a pair of scissors and a needle.
just go. Yeah. Okay, I got to get a kit. So now do I get a kit from you because we're talking, or do I go get a kit from your mother?
Well, you'll have to pick between the two of us.
Oh, okay. It's going to be one of those. All right. Okay, fine. I'll sort it out.
Okay,
All right. All
so
right. You sucked me in. Yep.
okay,
Mission accomplished. Well played. All right.
very good. I have two that are those. You saw the two that are submitted for the New York seminar,
Yep.
so I'm still waiting to hear if you wanted some structured class time. Hopefully, you'll be able to get it with me in New York.
Okay. All right. All right. You sucked me in. Damage done. All right. Yep.
Perfect.
Okay.
My
So,
job
yeah.
here is
So,
done.
notching your gun belt there. You got
There
it.
you go.
Yeah.
I
Okay.
suckered Gary in. I love it.
That's right. All right, Kate, this has been an absolute treat. Thanks so much for making the time. I really enjoyed this. Thank you.
Well, thank you for having me. It was a delight being here and talking to you. This was marvelous. Thank you so very much.
All right, and thanks to everyone for listening.